Welcome to Focus on the Family's weekend broadcast. We hope the following program will challenge you and encourage you in your faith journey.
I'd say men are more factual, literal, spontaneous, and women are more relational.
Men are much more docile and more objective without the emotional response.
And I really mean it!
Men like to solve problems, and women like to express their feelings, and that's not always the best combination.
Women are different from men in the sense that they are much more sensitive and emotional and tuned into what's going on in life.
Well, the fact is, men and women are very different from one another, and that can lead to some interesting interactions in your marriage. We'll talk more about that and your marriage on today's Focus on the Family with Focus President and author Jim Daly, and I'm John Fuller.
Hey, John, you know what? It's fascinating how in some ways we can be completely opposite with our spouse, and I think the Lord does that for a purpose.
Well, opposites attract, right?
And, well, they attract, and I think He planned it that way so that we can become more selfless. We've talked about that, but when you sit there and think, okay, Lord, why did you design it this way? I think that's one of the major reasons. He brings an introvert together with an extrovert. He brings a night owl together with a morning person. And before long, what you thought was bliss because you were so much alike, you suddenly realize, oh, we're not that much alike. And that can create friction.
It can. And the program we have today is really for marriages that don't have really intense friction, Jim. We're talking today to those who have healthier marriages. There's good interaction and connection. You're not dealing with a crisis, but you just have those general day-to-day kind of confrontations.
You know, and that's where there is a sense of goodwill toward your spouse. That's probably a good indicator that you're healthy, but maybe struggling, where you still have good care and concern. But maybe there's some cracks, like you said, John, in that relationship, and you know you need to work on some things. If it's an abusive situation, call our counselors. You want to get out of that situation, and we certainly are here to help you. That's why Focus is here, not just for that troubled crisis, but also for the tune-up, and that's what we're going to talk about today. And I think you're going to find great help from our special in-house marriage experts, our guests today, Dr. Greg and Aaron Smalley. Greg and Aaron, welcome back for the many times to Focus on the Family.
It's Thanks
great
for having
to
us.
Be here with you guys again.
Okay, differences. I want to start right here. You've got some kind of story about shopping. Let's kick it off with that.
We were just a couple weeks ago, we were doing a seminar in Florida. And so when we were finished with the seminar, it just, again, just illustrates how different we are, because we get into the car and I'm done talking. You know, men, we've got about 12,000 words that we're going to speak every day on average. I'd used them all up. I don't want to talk. The moment we get into the car, Aaron wants to talk. And I had to tell her, I'm like, hey, I need a break. So the nice part is you call your friends.
Yeah,
you
so I pick up my phone and call Taylor, our daughter, and my friends, and I start texting, and we head to the mall because I'm looking for a specific bag, a large like tote bag. And so I tell him, and he gets into it. He's like, okay, we can go and find that.
Oh, it's perfect, because now I don't like to shop, but will you give me a purpose? If there's some reason while we're there, and
so
she
you're on
said,
the hunt.
I didn't even know what a tote was. But it was something to carry a computer that she was looking for. So now we're on the hunt. So now we're at this mall. We go to one store. There's tons, and I'm looking. I'm holding them all up. I think we're there. But no, it wasn't quite good enough.
No, because as we looked, I started thinking, well, really, I could use this compartment, and I need that, and I need this kind of strap. Well, maybe it'd be good to have one with wheels on it.
Wheels? When did wheels factor into the whole thing? So we went to another store, and then we went to another store. And somewhere along the line, I'm looking at all these bags, you know, because I'm bound and determined. I mean, I see all these other guys with their wives. They're doing the same thing. You know, we're just hunting for something. And she comes up with a bathing suit for our son. She bought it. And I went, when
it's
did
called
you even,
a divergence.
When did you even?
It was,
we're looking for a bag.
But it caught your eye.
Well, it was the bargain basement. I mean, it was $7.
Okay,
so I was like, I can't pass that up. Well, and then we ran into a woman from the seminar and we had to have
we're
a conversation.
In Florida, and a mall. We run into someone that Aaron knows. And so now we have to stop and talk. And I'm going, we don't have time to talk. We've got to find this bag. I've got to shoot it, bag it, and let's get out of here. And then somehow we even ended up at a food court.
We just needed a little snack, a little energy to keep going. But then
she wants to talk again. Although she did get me some meat, so I was at least eating
good
meat while we're sitting there. Oh, man.
But then we ended up not finding the right bag. We saw one that was nice, but it was way overpriced. And so that night we get back to the hotel and Greg lays down. He is exhausted. So he's like sound asleep. Well, I find it online for a great price. And so I hand him my phone. I'm like, hey, I don't know how to do this.
She wakes me up.
From a dead sleep. And so he ends up buying me two bags from a dead sleep. But
for less than what we were going to do. But all that to say, we could have skipped every bit of that and just laid in our hotel room.
You wouldn't have found the $7 swim shorts.
Yes.
There is purpose to that. Let me ask you this. There's a scripture I love because I think, again, it's God's sense of humor. Genesis, right there in 1:27, he says, so God created mankind in his own image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. What's your spin on this? I gave you mine at the top of the program. Why did he do it this way?
Well, I love that verse. Even the very next verse down, I think it's in 31, that says, then he looked over all that he had made and saw that it was very good. So here's God who creates male and female. So different, and then ends up saying, and that's a good thing. And I think that's one of the most important realizations that we can make is that, you know, these differences that are probably going to frustrate us, irritate us, maybe be the basis for a lot of conflict, even for some couples who are splitting over irreconcilable differences. The truth is, see, Satan wants us to believe that differences are the problem. God is saying, what I created will never be the problem. The problem is never differences. It's how people manage their differences. That's the problem. That's how we get in the way.
And really, these differences, they bring spice, they bring balance, they bring all kinds of beauty to our relationship because we're different, and that's a good thing, like Greg is saying, but it's all in how we manage those differences.
Okay, let's talk about those differences. I mean, the Men Are From Mars famous book title, I think a Christian version of that was Men Are Like Waffles and Women Are Like Spaghetti. I didn't make that title up. So if you're offended by that, if you like waffles, that's not my fault.
More of a pancake guy myself.
There you go. What are they driving at, these differences? Describe them.
You know, for me, when I think about differences, I would say it this way. Marriage is like being in a canoe. Okay, of all my degrees, everything I've learned, that's how I would say it. Marriage is like being in a canoe, and this is what's important. Okay, think about before we were married, Aaron and I were in separate canoes, and we'd go on dates, and we'd kind of row up next to each other. And in life, you know, we're always rowing up to someone we can relate. But when we get married, when we become one, we're now in the same canoe. The problem is that every single little movement that she makes, every time that she leans one direction or does something, it throws me off balance as well. The threat is that somehow we're going to tip over. I would say differences are like those movements. All those differences that we have, gender, personality, all that, are like the movement to where when Aaron is moving, it's threatening me. I'm afraid we're going to tip over. It's doing something to me. So then I have to try to control her, settle her down. Don't move. Stop doing that. Quit doing it like that. And more than anything that I've learned is that marriage is like that canoe. We're in this canoe together. Outside of that, I mean, if I row up next to John Fuller, you know, and he's doing something I don't like, I can always push away and paddle back. But in a marriage, I can't do that. So all those little movement, like those differences, really what it does is it feels like a threat. It's somehow making me feel unsafe, nervous. I don't like it. It's doing something to me. And so if we can just remember, we're in the same canoe, and that's a good thing. That's how God designed
it. As long as you're not beating each other with paddles.
Exactly. Yeah.
Let me ask you this, though. You know, a lot of couples will experience this where those differences are so, they drive so much energy, so much angst, that they begin to go into the red zone, you know, where I would say communication shuts down. How does a couple first recognize, you know, we're going to have differences, we're not the same person, and how do we keep out of the red zone, if I could call it that?
Well, you think about before you get married, I know we experienced this, there were so many of those differences that actually drew us together, that, you know, little quirks, things that he did, I thought were so cute and sweet.
And now they're irritating.
Well, amazing what happens. Then you get into the same canoe. I like your analogy, Greg. And you get into the same canoe and, you know, they're no longer cute. They're threats. They're not like you. And so when you start seeing someone that's different, you know, especially as women, we just think a little tweak here, a little tweak there, and it'll be all good. Yeah. But think about what it feels like when someone's trying to change you and control you. You're not being accepted. You're not being embraced for who God made you to be.
Well, from a marriage counseling perspective, which both of you have done many hours with couples, when one spouse is trying to change the other spouse, that's usually a recipe for disaster. Mm-hmm. Why? It seems maybe rational. That's the best way to go. I can change him.
Well, one is manipulative. So if I'm trying to change her, basically what I'm saying is I don't like what you're doing. I think what I want or the way I think it should be is better than the way you think or what you're doing. So one, it sends a message that I'm superior. I think I'm better. I know more than you do. But also, it says what God created
is... You're supposed to say, yes, dear.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Yes, dear. Yeah. But it also...
I don't remember that happening like that, though.
Sorry, you're talking about the Lord.
You just listen to this podcast over and over and over again. You can hear me saying, yes, dear. It also says, though, to God almost, that, hey, what you created, I don't think is that good. Mm. You said it was good, but I'm kind of saying it's not because I don't like it. That's not the way that I would do it. That's different than me. Again, those movements are making the canoe feel real unstable. And that's why this doesn't, it just doesn't work.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you a common maybe debate. Whenever I use the word argument, somebody will write a letter saying Christians shouldn't argue. So let me just say the debate between a couple. It could be something like this. Honey, you treated that person with such deference and such kindness. How come you don't treat me that way? If I were to say something that bad, you would have been down my throat. Yeah. We're far more comfortable with our spouse and letting them know what we really feel than perhaps with even close friends or family members. Mm-hmm. Why is that?
I had a realization just last week. I was at the children's hospital with our little Annie, who has a few special needs. And, you know, the doctors were coming in one after the other and really looking at her and evaluating for what was wrong. And for some, you know, like you're saying, I see everything that's right with her. But then why, when we look at our spouse, do we look at these differences as something is wrong? Mm. And thus, you know, with our friends, with our kids, we will see what's right. Mm. And so why can't we extend that grace and see what God created is good? It says, and like you said in Genesis, it's good. And to really allow him to be who he is. But again, being intimate and being close, often we can't, or we choose not to do that.
Well, and I guess it'd be another way of saying it, the cup of grace for others can sometimes be much deeper than the cup of grace for your spouse.
And if you really, again, think of that analogy of being in the same canoe, that's what I think is perfect about this, is that I give someone grace because I can push away from you. I can paddle back away. If you're doing something I don't like, you're not in my canoe. You are not a threat to my well-being. In so many ways, Erin and I are in that canoe. Everything that she does, every movement she makes can create that instability, that threat. In some way, it's the deepest, most intimate relationship that I will ever have outside of my relationship with God is with my wife. And therefore, she knows more, and it's that threat when she's moving around, I think is why that it's easier for us to extend grace to other people.
The only thing when I hear that analogy, it sounds like a bit of fear, that you're fearful that my canoe is tipping one way or the other. You don't want it to be that, right?
Well, I just think in a deep, close relationship, because we're one, because we're in this marriage, it's true that every movement I make moves the boat in some way. And if you've ever been in a canoe, we know what that's like. And so it's not a bad thing. I'm not saying that the canoe thus is wrong or there's something bad about it. I'm just saying the reality is that Erin and I are in this together. Mm. And what happens is that I go from seeing all these little differences as cute and funny and, oh, I laugh at them, to they start to irritate me a little bit. I don't like the way that happens. It keeps me maybe from doing something. So I begin to see them in a negative light. I develop these negative beliefs. That creates conflict. And then down the road, hearts close, hearts harden. I mean, all because we didn't know how to manage these differences. So I say the key is, can you learn how to manage these differences?
I'm John Fuller, and this is Focus on the Family with Jim Daly. And today we're listening to a conversation that we recorded with our colleagues, Dr. Greg Smalley and his wife, Erin. And we're hearing about differences in marriage and how to navigate those with your spouse. And the source for this great content is Greg and Aaron's book called The Wholehearted Wife, 10 Keys to a More Loving Relationship. We'll recommend you look for that and for a link to our free marriage assessment at focusonthefamily.ca. This Focus on the Family broadcast will continue in just a moment.
I was convinced that nothing could change what was going on in our marriage, and I didn't want to try anymore. But my commitment to God helped me try one more time.
We went to a Hope Restored Marriage Intensive, and it was life-changing. The counselors created the safest environment we could imagine, so that let us really talk. We're on a much different course now, and I believe we received a miracle that week.
Receive your free consultation at HopeRestored.com.
Find fun for your kids just a click away.
And now, Adventures in Odyssey.
The Adventures in Odyssey Club, where your 8 to 12-year-old can find trusted, faith-building entertainment in a safe online club. It features almost every episode ever, plus special monthly club-only episodes and content, and a Focus on the Family Clubhouse magazine subscription. Sign up today. Just go to aioclub.org/radio.
Thanks for listening to Focus on the Family. Let's resume now with the balance of today's programming.
Okay, I don't feel like we've actually fleshed out the gender differences, so I'm coming back to that one. Men and women, this is a generalization, I get that, and probably the 80-20 rule applies, where 80% of men will act this way, and women, and 20% the other way. So I get that, but typically, Greg, I'll let you speak for the men. What are men like? What's maybe we should reverse this, actually.
I know, after that noise, now that I think about it. We might start over.
But go ahead, take a swing. What are men about, typically?
You know, so take communication, for example. So as for me, a lot of men see communication needing some sort of specific purpose, a problem to solve, something to fix, a question to answer, some decision that we need to make. So if there's not a clear purpose in my mind, I don't need to do a lot of talking.
So is this hardwired? Why is it so predictable?
I think it's exactly hardwired. I think it's back to the Genesis verse. God made us male and female. So as a male, just the way that God's created us, for most men, we communicate when there's purpose. We're looking to fix something, to solve something. Our goal is action. So I'm listening for facts. I'm listening for what is it that Aaron wants here? And the irony is that she's completely different. So within communication, you know, Aaron, she's wanting to connect. She's wanting to relate.
Aaron's going to talk about that. Go ahead, Aaron. Tell us about the women.
I saw her face.
She really wants to talk about
that. Man, he's telling me what I'm about.
He knows that I'm going to have a lot of words to say and a lot of emotion, and I really want to connect. So he was trying to stifle
just because
that.
I love her.
He was getting to the point.
All right, formally, Aaron.
He was trying to control me. So
tell me what women are about, mostly. Again, 80-20 rule.
Exactly. And like you're saying, so many couples will say, oh, I'm totally opposite of that. But as women, we want to connect. We want to build an intimate, close relationship through conversation. We just want to share. There's no limit on the number of words we have to emote with. And really, we're sharing our feelings and our needs. And the ultimate goal is just this deep level of connection. And it, obviously, it's very different than what men want through this conversation. Thus, it can be frustrating.
We have talked a long time ago. Your dad, Gary Smalley, who's a contributor and co-author of this book, The Wholehearted Wife, he and John Trent created something, a tool. It's a quick tool. It's not a full diagnostic on personality, but it was the animal comparison.
So good.
Walk us through that, because I think that's an easy way for people to understand themselves in a humorous style. And then, John, we'll put that test up online. Mm. If you haven't taken it before, come to the Focus on the Family website and you could take it. But describe the lion, otter, beaver, golden retriever.
Yeah, it's so perfect because we're talking gender differences in communication, but then there's also personality difference. Like a lion is that person that really wants to be in charge. You think of an otter as this, that fun-loving, life is a party, always wants to be the life of the party. Then you've got a golden retriever, just that sweet, very relational, caring, you know, a lot of empathy. Then you've got the Beaver personality that's more structured.
Engineering,
mm-hmm. detailed, you know, gets things done because there's so much order. So as Aaron and I got married, you know, I'm a Beaver golden retriever. So I can be relational, but really the key, I like things done right. I like the order and the systems and all of that. But I married an otter. So Erin is just, she's so extroverted and fun-loving, mm-hmm. you know, life is a party. And so that we quickly began to bump into.
How does an otter like living with a beaver?
Do you want the truth?
Absolutely.
You're killing me, Jim Daly.
Well, as he's talking, it makes me laugh because it makes me think of our house. He has order in, you know, his areas, but me, I have piles of stuff and, you know, and I know where everything's at generally, but it's, you know, a little disordered chaos, and I'm totally okay with that, where for him, that drives him crazy. Mm. So it's important to understand how each of you are created. I tell a story in the book that early on, growing up, I was adopted, and so in my family, I always wondered if there was something wrong with me because I was so different than my other family members. Mm. And I will never forget, my sophomore year of college, his sister brought me this personality test. It was the first time I had ever taken anything about, and I had no idea about personality. So I took it and I realized I was an otter golden retriever, and it just made sense. No one else in my family was an otter or golden retriever.
It was who you are.
It was who I was, and it just brought so much peace and understanding. Nothing was wrong. It was all right. It was how God created me. So understanding yourself is critical, but then understand who your spouse is in their personality, because then it's so much easier to see it as a good thing.
Right, and not
versus a bad thing.
Yeah. Let me quickly, as we're wrapping up, get to the positive nature of this, Greg and Aaron. What are some of the benefits that married couples can experience when they learn to accept each other for who they are and embrace their own, you know, their own personality bends? Hmm.
You know, really, first and foremost, if we as women especially can stop trying to change our spouse, you know, to see it as a positive that we're different and that's okay. You know, if something's out of balance, being careful of how we bring that up, bringing it up at a time other than conflict, but there has to be room for both of us in this relationship and in this marriage. We have to make room for both of us. It's two people. There's a quote that I love. It's my job to love and respect. This was actually from Billy Graham's wife. It's my job to love and respect Billy. It's God's job to make him good.
Wow. I mean, that's good. Let me mention this scripture, which I think fits. And then, Greg, you can respond to all of it. But Philippians 4:8. This is beautiful. This is scripture. We're Christians, those of us that believe in Jesus Christ. Here's what it says, not what Jim Daly says. Finally, brothers and sisters, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. And I would think that what he's saying there is act in such a way. That sums it up, doesn't it, Greg?
It perfectly does, because not only God created us different, he said that was good. So we need to give each other room, as Aaron said, and accept these differences, understand these differences. Mm-hmm. But Jim, what you're talking about, I think, is the key to the whole thing. You want to change the way you see your spouse. If you see their personality differences as irritating, you really work on valuing those differences. That's the key. It's whatever's good. I mean, God made this good. I love in Luke where it talks about, for where my treasure is, so what I value, see, there will my heart be also. I think when we really recognize those differences is bringing such uniqueness, spice into our relationship. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, relationship would be bland. It would be boring. If we both were alike, where's the fun in that? I mean, literally one of us wouldn't be necessary. But I think for the moment that I really went from trying to change Aaron and trying to deal with all these irritating differences in gender and personality and family of origin to really going, God, show me the value of what she's bringing to our marriage. And if you want to change that right now, all you have to do, I would encourage you, make a list of what is it that you love about your spouse. Think about their personality, their character, their gender differences. Write those things down. Make that a list. Call that your value list and hold on to that. Mm. It's in those moments that I'm irritated with Aaron, I have an option. I can pull that list out and look through it and go, you know what? Yeah, God created an amazing person. She's amazing, and it's because of all those differences. Mm. And so if we can get to that place of really valuing those differences, I think that's how we really change this.
Okay, so we're in the canoe together. We've got to accept our differences and celebrate them, really.
Value
them. Lean into them. See what's right versus what's wrong in our spouse. I mean, we're so quick to find out what's wrong. And do come to the website, take the test. It's fun. And I think it'll put a little laughter into your relationship with your spouse. Man, John, this has flown by, hasn't it?
It has. I've benefited a great deal from the conversation. I'll have some talking points when I get home tonight, I think.
Greg and Aaron, thanks so much for being with us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
That's how we concluded our conversation with Greg and Aaron Smalley on this episode of Focus on the Family, and some great insights from them based on the book that they co-wrote with Greg's dad, the late Gary Smalley, called The Wholehearted Wife.
John, it's always a good time in the studio with Greg and Aaron. They've got such a great sense of humor, and we really do hope you found some good encouragement for your marriage, and I want to recommend you get their book. We talked about gender and personality differences today, but that's just one of the many topics they address. Greg and Aaron have identified 10 keys for a more loving marriage. Who doesn't want that? Things like honoring your spouse, diffusing anger, and the importance of connecting spiritually. This is great content, and I'd love to put a copy of The Wholehearted Wife into your hands when you send a gift of any amount to Focus on the Family to do ministry together. And that's our way of saying thanks for joining us in strengthening and rescuing marriages today.
And you can donate at focusonthefamily.com/broadcast, or when you call 800, the letter A in the word family, 800-232-6459. At that website, you'll find a link to our free marriage assessment, which is a wonderful tool where you can quickly get a good overview of what's working well in your marriage and some areas where you may need to improve a bit, and we'll urge you to check that out. On behalf of Jim Daly and the entire team, thanks for listening to Focus on the Family. I'm John Fuller, inviting you back as we once more help you and your family thrive in Christ. Listening to Focus on the Family's weekend broadcast. We'll take a quick break here and then return with another faith-building program for your family. Stay tuned.
Grandparents can be that extra level, that extra layer that our children need, especially in today's world. They need all the reinforcement they can get of what life can look like when you're doing it the right way, when you're living it God's way, and laying those examples out for them of being hospitable and having good manners and being kind and considerate and speaking life into people.
That's Chris Howard, and she's our guest today on Focus on the Family. Your host is Focus President and author Jim Daly, and I'm John Fuller.
Hey, John, grandparents are special people, aren't they? We're not there yet.
I'm not there yet, but I do have great memories of my grandparents.
But we're looking forward to that day.
Someday.
All in the right order. But seriously, grandparents have a unique voice and influence in families. And I'm excited to honor them today. Many of you write in or email us or somehow get a hold of us, probably because, John, you give them the details.
But perhaps that could be.
And you say, can you have more on grandparenting? So here it is. This is one of the, hopefully many times, we'll be addressing grandparenting and the things that you can do to have, in this case today, rock star grandparenting, which is Chris Howard's great book, and Chris is with us today.
She's the mother of three adult children, Corey Robertson, one of the stars of the A&E hit TV show Duck Dynasty, Ryan Howard, and Ashley Nelson. And Chris has 14 grandchildren, and I'm sure a year from now it'll be 15 or more. She directs...
That's how that works.
It is, yes. open up the floodgates. So Chris directs a Christian youth camp in the summer and spends time serving in the mission field. She hosts a radio show called It's a Mom Thing and has written a number of books, including, as you mentioned, Jim, Rockstar Grandparent, How You Can Lead the Way, Light the Road, and Launch a Legacy. And, of course, we have copies of that book and this conversation as well at focusonthefamily.com /broadcast.
Chris, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited.
It's so fun. We've had so many of the Robertson clan here. You quickly, as we met each other a few moments ago, you said, okay, I'm not the hunter in the family. Is that a little pressure to go out with the clan?
No, because they don't want to take anybody else. Like, they have their hunting crew that they go with.
It's kind of a sacred thing.
Yeah, like, you have to be really included in that. But
you've never been invited?
I've never been invited.
Come on. Willie?
I really should tell Willie. You're right.
You're Corey's mom.
I'm Corey's mom.
Yeah.
And so, Corey does hunt with Willie.
And you're Sadie's grandmother then.
I am.
And we've had Sadie on the broadcast. Man, she is a delightful young lady.
She is a little firecracker.
Are you taking credit for that?
I'm taking every bit of the credit for that.
That is awesome that you do. Yes. That's what a grandparent needs to do, right?
We should. Absolutely.
Yeah. Hey, let's start there. Okay. Why is it such an awesome thing to be a grandparent?
Okay, well, there's so many reasons why it's an awesome thing, but I think one of the biggest reasons is you have acquired some knowledge and some life skills and some wisdom, and you are just ready to pour that into somebody, and your kids are done with that.
They don't want to hear anymore.
They've heard everything that you had to say. So then you get this new crop of precious little babies who love and adore you because you're not in the house with them all the time. They're the guest, and you're the special house they get to go to. And you get to have all this time with them that you can share all those things that you've learned. And guess what? They really like listen.
Yeah.
It's so fun. It's like, and just even with Sadie, you mentioned Sadie, and I love to take some of the credit, but she does have awesome parents. But she lived next door to me. And so what an honor that was that she just would run back and forth. And, you know, I tell people when she was little, she would say, because we owned a publishing company, we traveled a lot. And she said, "Too, Mama, why do you have to go out of town again?" And I said, "Well, sweetie, it's part of my job." And now I'm saying that to her.
Yeah,
why are you leaving? Stay here for a little bit.
You said something that some listeners may, what'd she just say? You called yourself the Too Mama.
Too Mama.
Give us that explanation.
They call me Too Mama. And that was John Luke. John Luke was my oldest firstborn grandchild. We have Rebecca now that Corey and Willie adopted into the family when she was 16. So she's older, but John Luke was the oldest born grandchild, and he was calling Corey Mama and me Mama, both of us, which is confusing for all involved.
Yes.
However, inside, I loved it, of course. You know, grandparents love that. So anyway, we just kept trying every name, even names I said I would never say, Mamaw. I was like, call me grandma, anything. So anyway, we had tried all kinds of grandma names and nothing would stick. It was just mama and mama for both of us.
Yeah.
And one day after Sadie was born, he looked at me. He was wanting to go with me and he was crying. And I was saying, "No, I want you to go with mama. You're going to go home." And he's saying mama like to me. And I said, "No, to this mama." And he looked up at me and said, "To mama." And literally from that day, never varied. It's been Two Mama since that day. I think it's because he was so smart. Now, he's my firstborn.
Yeah, of course.
So when it comes to your grandchildren, you honor the firstborn.
You hear that, John? John's a firstborn.
Thank you. I get a lot of grief from Jim.
Well, you know, just own it, I guess.
And I'm not going to hear the end of this.
Anyway, I just thought because we brought Sadie home and we had said so many times, we're like, "Oh, we have two babies now," because he was only 21 months old. We have two babies now. So he could add. And he's got one mama and then two mama.
Let's, again, mentioning Sadie, one of the things with grandparenting, and of course you had wonderful proximity being the neighbor, right?
Right.
To your grandchild and to your adult children. But I think one of the things that's so obvious is grandparents seem to have time. You mentioned that.
Right.
I want to make sure we put an exclamation point around that. And it's a bit of disadvantage for the parents because they're busy, you know, providing for the home and doing all the things that they need to do in their 30s, 40s, and 50s. And the grandparents have time. And there seems to be that special bond that a grandchild feels that. Like grandma and grandpa, they always recognize me. They always see me. They always hear me. And they make time for me. How do you balance that, especially if the parent, the adult child, is a little jealous of that fact? What do you do?
Well, hopefully that is not the case, and hopefully you have a relationship with your children that you don't have to deal with there being some jealousy there. But I did worry about that when John Luke was born because he loved being with me so much. But Corey was so great about that and accepted that role that I had as a grandparent. And so I think there's always, in whatever relationship you're dealing with, there's boundaries. And you have to figure that out of what the parent, you have to be respectful of the parents of the child. because they are the ones in control. You have to be respectful of what their goals and desires for that child is, and then you work within that. You have to be smart and think.
Even if you don't agree with
yes,
all
even if
of
you
that.
Don't all the way agree. And I tell a story about when we were at the movie with Sadie, and the movie Spirit had come out with a spirited horse. And as you can tell by working with Sadie, she's got a little spirit about her.
I haven't seen anybody in the family that doesn't have spirit, but maybe someday.
She was little, like 4 or 5, and she'd left her stuffed animal in the car, and she wanted it. And Corey was wrangling the kids and different things, and she told Sadie, "No, we're not going to get it. You're fine. You can sit through the movie fine." And as the grandparent, I could have easily said, "I'll go get it, honey." But I could tell that was a teaching moment for Corey. Corey was teaching Sadie that she could sit here and she would be perfectly fine. And I've already said no, and we're not changing that. That was the lesson she was teaching. So I had to bite my tongue, swallow, sit there and reinforce what Corey was saying. "You're fine, Sadie. You'll be fine." And that's what a grandparent needs to do.
Well, that, and again, we need to punch that point, because maybe an unspoken guideline is you got to reinforce the parents' desires and wishes and how you go about doing that. That can cause a lot of conflict,
or
the two can allow it to cause conflict.
Right.
How do you deflate that? Mm-hmm. Did you have a negotiation day where you and Corey sat down and said, "Okay, this is how we should do it," or her saying, "This is what I want from you, Mom"?
We did not, and I think that could work in some families, but because we're so close, and with all three of my children, and they understood my parenting skills, and becoming a grandparent did not stop my parenting skills. I still use many of those techniques as I'm working with my grandchildren.
And Corey and Willie are comfortable with that.
And they're very
that makes a difference.
Right. They're very comfortable with that. And I think had we had some issues, we would have been able to talk that through. But we really didn't have any issues. That they felt comfortable with me. They gave me the freedom to be the parent I needed to be when they were in my home, or the grandparent I needed to be. And because they were so close to us, sometimes there was more of a crossover to more parenting than grandparenting.
Right.
I have grandchildren who live 7 hours away, and that's a little bit different than the ones who actually live next door in your house all the time.
Right.
You have to be more mindful and more intentional, more influential in those daily things, those manners and habits and things like that that you want your children to have, just like you want your children to have.
Yeah. You actually, during the taping of Duck Dynasty, you came on the set and you helped the kids with schooling. So you kind of became the grandma tutor.
I did. And that's a God journey, I think. You know, I think that's where God takes you on a journey that you don't really know where it's going until the end.
You just show up every day.
Yeah, and I always wanted to be a teacher, and so my degree is in teaching. And then what I did with my degree is I discovered when I started teaching that there were just so many children that are not served in the school system, kids who are not don't have the difficulties that put them in special classes, but struggle in school.
Right.
So I created a program, and I called it the SOAR program at our school, for kids who have just learning differences, just have to learn a little bit different way.
Sure.
But that meant I tutored people from 7th grade to 12th grade, so really every subject matter.
Yeah.
Well, little did I know that one day when Duck Dynasty would be filming, they would say, "Well, the kids have to have a tutor on the set every day. They cannot film. That's a law. A teacher has to be on the set with them." And so Corey and I were talking like, okay, how are we going to handle this? And I'm like, well, I'll do it. I mean, that's just the natural thing. The kids were much younger, of course, and we wanted somebody with them on the set that could help them if they just had to come over and say, "I don't know what to say here or do here," or whatever. And so that, of course, fell to me, and I just felt like God just was raising me up for that moment. And because they were at the time, River was like 5 and Reed was 17 and all the Robertson kids. So it was a one-room classroom like in the old days.
Sure.
Like everybody would have to bring me their different things.
It does. It sounds almost, and I use this word affectionately, like old-fashioned. I mean, that you guys are all connected.
Mm-hmm.
You're all integrated, mm-hmm. even though you're doing high-tech filming and,
yeah.
you know, a very successful show and all those things.
Yeah.
When you look at technology today, I would think one of the areas in parenting that's been really difficult for a lot of families is how to manage your child's tech consumption. So how does a grandparent not fumble that ball and try to reinforce those rules or come up with their own or even observations that they can say to their adult children, you know, Johnny is spending a lot of time on the screen. Those can be real tender areas. So have you had that kind of issue? Or
that can really be tender areas, because this is an area that we're not familiar with. Like, right. We did not grow up with this. But it's huge today. And, of course, you said in my intro that I work at a summer camp. I still run a summer camp and have 1,000 kids go through there. So I deal with children a lot. Mm-hmm. And this tech world is very, very scary. And I know you guys have covered it a lot in here. Parents have to be so aware of that and be so influential in that area. As a grandparent, I would respect what my children did. For Corey, all of her kids had to have their phone on the table in the kitchen at a certain time at night.
Yeah, we do that too.
And Ryan did too, my son as well. And so when they were at my house, rules applied the same way. Now, the great thing about being a grandparent is you can even do different things. Like, you can say, when we're all eating at our house, at grandma's house, no technology. Every phone is put away. This is conversation. This is talking. This is time to be together. And I had a little box, and I still have it, in the middle of my table, and the kids can pull out a question and ask questions. And they love that. They love being the one to pull out the question and be able to ask everybody. And even though my youngest now is 14 and my oldest is 30, so we have lived through this now, and they're all teenagers, and it's just super fun. But we still have a lot of conversation. And because we're the grandparent, we're like, we're old people. We can say, hey, no, we like to talk.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And they'll accommodate you.
They will.
This Focus on the Family broadcast will continue in just a moment.
Hi, this is Jim Daly with Focus on the Family.
And I'm Jeannie Mancini with the March for Life.
Join us on May 9th for a Live 2020, a nationwide pro-life celebration.
We'll be alive from Southern California, Dallas, Chicago, Atlanta, and South Florida with live music, amazing speakers, and a live 4D ultrasound of a baby broadcast on massive digital screens.
Register now for this free event at focusonthefamily.com/alive. That's focusonthefamily.com/alive.
Adolescence. The word strikes fear in your heart as a parent, but your child can thrive in those turbulent years with your help. Launch Into the Teen Years is the perfect video-based tool to help prepare your son or daughter. Through fun and engaging videos, Focus on the Family experts will address topics vital for having a successful teen experience. Launch Into the Teen Years can help your child thrive. Get it today at focusonthefamily.com/store. That's focusonthefamily.com/store. Thanks for listening to Focus on the Family. Let's resume now with the balance of today's programming.
Chris, another common response that we receive here at Focus is from grandparents who are watching their adult kids go through divorce and how that impacts the grandchildren. I know that's been part of your family story, and you're speaking from that experience. What can be done from a grandparenting standpoint? I mean, there are so many dangerous areas there for a grandparent and kind of difficult patches to walk through. How do you advise a grandparent to act, where to probe, where to back off? And then what do you do for the help of the grandchild to better cope with what's going on?
This is a very difficult subject, and one that unfortunately happens way too often. And it did happen in our family. It wasn't something that we ever thought would be a part of our story, but it is. And as a grandparent, you are literally crushed for your grandchildren when you see that this is going to happen in their life. But for me, the thing that we made sure that we did was that things don't change as far as our relationship with our grandkids and with our children, that we don't make big moves, we don't do anything that changes in how we interact with them. And I even told my children, I said, we want to be very careful that we don't use this event as an excuse for bad behavior or anything that we would not allow otherwise.
What do they need from you as a grandparent?
They need grandparents to be loving, supportive, secure. They are the security for them. When this happens in their family, the grandparents' role is hugely important to say, no, our family is fine. we are going to make it through this. We're going to help you. We're going to be there to do whatever you need, but you're going to be fine. And we're all going to be fine.
Let me, in the book, you mentioned this specific story. And, you know, I think one of your grandchildren, they were 5 years old. In this particular family, there were three young children. And that five-year-old said to you, "Will you help us?" What did you say? I mean, that's heart-wrenching.
That is
when you hear that.
Yes,
but what did you respond with?
Gut-wrenching, yes. And so what I said, and this is where we have to like really be adults in the whole thing. In the whole divorce situation, every adult involved has to be an adult. And that's where I did not fall apart. That's where I just picked her up and hugged her and I said, "Absolutely, we are going to help you in any way you need help. You don't worry about a thing."
So you reassured
the
child.
Yeah. That's right.
How about the God component of that? How did you, or did you as a grandparent, work in God's desire for family and, you know, his heart's breaking too, just like yours? I mean, what kind of terminology did you use, or
yes,
did you?
We did. No, we absolutely did that. And we've said that to all of our children. This is not God's desire for family. God's desire for family is that a man and woman stay together forever, but sometimes it doesn't work that way. And here's the thing, God still loves you and loves our family and is going to be with us and support us. And I'm here to say that those three kids from that particular family are now 15, 17, and 19. One heads off to Baylor this week and are just amazing kids. And I'm
That's
so
good.
Honored to have been able to have a huge part in their life.
Well, when you think of that, the research will suggest that, you know, the supportive external family is really important in that moment. So you all must have done a great job coming around those kids and helping them stabilize in a very destabilized environment. So
I
well
think
done.
That is the key, just to stabilize when it doesn't seem very stable. Yes.
Yeah. Chris, I want to really nail what grandparenting provides. And you mentioned this in your great book, Rockstar Grandparent. You talk about the attributes that a grandparent provides a grandchild. And parents need to understand this because it doesn't have to be and shouldn't be adversarial. But you talk about grandparents teaching grandchildren to be hospitable, how to use words for good, how to love unconditionally, how to pray. These are all things parents want to teach as well. Why do grandparents have the benefit of being able to either introduce or reinforce these things?
Well, we mentioned it a little bit earlier. Grandparents should have a little more time on their hands. And that time allows them that more of that time that's like one-on-one, like grandparents love to take their kids, grandkids camping or time when they just have them by themselves. And so you can use those moments. But also, here's the thing. You're teaching while they're watching you be hospitable, while they're watching you use words for good. And that means even in divorce situations, that means even if you don't agree with the parent, that means even if you don't agree with what the grandchild is doing, but using your words wisely and using words that influence in a good way. So it's not necessarily that we have to do anything differently. We just have to model those things that we want our children. It's like our own children. If you want that five-year-old to grow up and be a certain way, guess what? You have to do those things that will help ensure that. There's no guarantees. Parenting doesn't guarantee the perfect child because we all have the freedom to think and do what we want to do. And
make
grandparents
choices
the same way.
Yeah.
But grandparents can be that extra level, that extra layer that our children need, especially in today's world. They need all the reinforcement they can get of what life can look like when you're doing it the right way, when you're living it God's way, and laying those examples out for them of being hospitable and having good manners and being kind and considerate and speaking life into people.
Yeah, that's good. And now I'm assuming your husband is Tupaw.
Tupapa.
Tupapa. Okay, yep. That was a good guess.
That was good.
But did you kind of get together at some point and say, what's our grandparenting plan? I'm thinking of the firstborns, John. That's why.
Thank
but,
you. Yes.
I mean, does it need to be that intentional? Well, is it wise to say, you know, when you have your first grandchild, do you say, okay, what do we want to do as grandparents now that we are grandparents? What do we want to accomplish here?
I think it's good to be intentional like that. I don't know that we necessarily did. We were a little bit younger for grandparents.
Say that again.
I will say that. I was 42, which is pretty young, so we were still in the middle of our big careers
that
and working.
Young.
And, you know, we had a lot going on in life, so I don't know that we sat down and did that intentionally. But we intentionally have always done that with our family. And it's in the book. We have our, 58 principles of living. You know,
58?
Yeah, we have a lot.
That's good.
She's probably a firstborn, Jim.
I'm not. But my husband is, yes. And he really, really wanted this done. And we also have a family mission statement. And so that is, you know, we know what we want to accomplish with our children and our grandchildren without sitting down and thinking that through. But yes, there have been conversations. Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. There's a funny aspect. And I think grandparenting has the opportunity to be filled with humor.
Absolutely.
Which I think is great. But you and your husband, John, you were trying to practice a lip-syncing thing. What was going on with that?
Okay, we were, every year for Christmas, we have Christmas at my house. It's a huge Christmas, and we don't exchange gifts. The gift is what you bring, your talent. So everybody, it's a huge talent show. It's the craziest thing ever. And so this past that year, a couple of years ago, I decided that we were going to lip sync to the Frozen song.
Okay.
And do it live. And so I was making him practice with me. Of course, men aren't always game for the things that us women dream up. But anyway, I was
especially
making
crazy things.
So we were driving to Huntsville to see the grandkids, and we were practicing, and he just was not taking it seriously.
That's a 7-hour drive, right?
7 hours. I'm like, how can you not know these words in 7 hours? So anyway, he said, no, I'm getting it. So I put the camera up to film him, to show him. Literally, I didn't have good motives. I was going to show him that he really wasn't doing his job. Okay. Well, it was so hilariously funny that we ended up just showing that on the screen for our talent at Christmas, and the kids just were dying because we'd never done anything like that at all in our whole crazy life. And so it was just a fun way to show them. And we started it off by saying, you know, y'all go with us almost everywhere we go, but sometimes we're alone and we want to show you what we do when we're alone. And we hit the button. And so they just loved it. And yes, grandparenting is the time to be fun. And you, both of you guys, are going to be the best grandparents.
Oh, yay!
You love fun. And it's just fun. Yes.
I like it. Hey, at the end here, it's really important to talk about faith. And a lot of grandparents are stressed out because, you know, again, their adult children are running fast and they may not be able to pay attention to faith development in their kids the way the grandparents would hope. I mean, I'm just staging this. Yeah. It's a lot of different scenarios. But for some reason, the grandparents could be worried that the kids aren't getting enough spiritual input. What do you do? What are things that a grandparent can do to augment appropriately what mom and dad aren't able to get to?
Well, we know that even biblically, how important grandparents are to their grandchildren. We see that modeled even in the Bible. And we've seen that modeled for years in our growth as adults and in our faith. We've watched grandparents model that for their grandchildren. But some specific things that we can do in today's world is because we can text them and we can send scriptures and we can say, I see you have a dentist appointment today. I'm praying for you today. Or I see you're trying out for cheerleader. I'm praying that you do the best job and everything comes to you. And it's just keeping that before them that you depend on God to help them with their daily life. And, of course, inviting them. When your kids are little, the little ones, you can invite to whatever your church has, vacation Bible school, summer camps, things like that, making sure that's available for your grandchildren. And most parents are happy with that you'll help in any way. So just keeping that before them, keeping your faith before them, letting them know the legacy of your faith. We tell that to our kids quite often about how their great-grandfather, what he did, what he started, and how it's still going on, so that they're aware of that.
Yeah.
So modeling that, showing them that history, modeling that right behavior, and then pouring out to them through texting and verbal and things that you say to them, and yeah.
That's good. Chris, this has been great. Your wonderful book, Rockstar Grandparent, it's a good resource, one that, John, you and I are going to have to keep on the shelf maybe for a couple of years.
I am not letting go of my copy, yeah.
and then we're going to pull it down and we're going to do it. So thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Let me turn to you, the listener. We're here for you. I mean, you might be in a difficult position as a grandparent. There might be some spiritual strife. We didn't cover that one. You know, where there's a disagreement on how to talk to the grandkids about faith and those things. We're here for you. Call us. We have caring Christian counselors that can help you think through how to go about doing that. Plus, we have Chris's wonderful book available for you. And if you can make a gift of any amount, we'll say thank you by sending Chris's book to you. Maybe it's a monthly gift or maybe a one-time gift. If you can't afford it, we'll get it in your hands. Others, I trust, will take care of the expense of that.
Yeah, we really would encourage you to become a monthly supporter of Focus on the Family and a gift of any amount. Either that monthly gift or one-time gift, as Jim said, makes a big difference for us and allows us to reach out and offer great encouragement like we've done today. Our number is 800, the letter A in the word family. And online, we're at focusonthefamily.com/broadcast. On behalf of Jim Daly and the entire team, thanks for listening to Focus on the Family. I'm John Fuller, inviting you back as we once again help you and your family thrive in Christ.